You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All comments are current at the time of publication. It's a podcast that's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Emma Louise Fenelon.
Since it began, LawPod UK has covered a range of topics of particular interest to those practicing in medical law. Recent popular episodes include key medical law updates and essential inquest law updates. A shameless plug from me now, but I hope that these more technical episodes will dovetail nicely with the excellent Quarterly Medical Law Review, which is now a fully searchable resource that I am sure practitioners will find useful. I'm delighted to have Sarah Lambert QC and Dominic Ruckkeen here with me to talk you through what you need to know should you encounter a loss of chance claim. Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about the two types of loss of chance claims you are going to discuss today?
Yes, Emma, thank you. Today we're going to look at two distinct and different types of loss of a chance claims as they arise in the PI and clinic arenas. Firstly, in respect of causation, and secondly, in respect of quantum. I should say there is actually a third, which is in relation to professional negligence claims. For example, if a PI claimant were to allege that his solicitors had been negligent, perhaps by failing to issue in time or had failed to include certain types of loss, in those cases, courts have to assess both prospects of success per se and prospects of success in respect of particular heads of loss and the level of recovery. But that's a separate area that we're not looking at today. We're going to assume, and I'm going to assume, that none of our listeners will actually require that knowledge because obviously nobody's negligent.
Let's hope not.
I'm sure not. In terms of the two areas that we are going to look at, in other words, loss of a chance in respect of causation and then separately in respect of quantum, we're going to look at some legal principles and hopefully signpost our listeners to the most useful cases and then give some practical advice realistically about how to manage, because there are a number of restrictions in these areas which the courts have imposed. So firstly, in respect of causation, everybody knows causation in PI and clinic arena is balance of probabilities. In other words, 51% or more something is, 50% or less likely to happen, and it is not. This, of course, also works in reverse, Emma, which is really useful in explaining the outcome, for example, in Chester and Afshar, probably one of the most famous cases in respect of informed consent, but also, of course, a chance case. The claimant argued that the adverse outcome, which in fact materialised, would on the balance of probabilities not have occurred on a different date. Now, of course, a defendant will say, well, the risks were the same, and hence they would have materialised on a different occasion. But that sort of approach, if a defendant wants to run it, and I've had defendants who do successfully run it, has to be based on the particular physiology of a particular claimant. In other words, we say that's more risk applied here simply because of the nature of the underlying person. If, however, it's simply an inherent risk in the procedure, and nothing takes this claimant out of the ordinary run of patients, the balance of probabilities still arises. Causation in terms of loss of a chance comes into play where the claimant seeks to establish that they've lost the chance of better treatment. In other words, they can't prove that non-negligent treatment would either have avoided the injury or given them a better outcome on the balance of probabilities.
What does that mean in practical terms for practitioners?
It means a bit of a headache, practical terms, Emma. What it means is effectively you can have a claimant, for example, if we take as an example delayed diagnosis of cancer. Let's start with the easy one. If prospects of survival as a result of delay in treatment have been reduced from 70% down to 30%, then the claimant succeeds on the basis of established causation principles. So you could have a situation where survival, for example, was always above 51% and remains above 51%, but has been reduced, say, from 85% to 65%, or on the alternative basis was always going to be below balance of probabilities. In other words, even with appropriate treatment, survival prospects were, say, 42%, but that's been reduced even further to 27%. And those sort of loss of a chance cases in causation are where the headache truly lies.
And I think it's that latter scenario that the claimant in Greg and Scott sought to litigate, which Dom is going to tell us all about.
Yes, Greg and Scott is really the leading case in this area. And in terms of the fact it was a delayed diagnosis of lymphoma, the claimant brought an action against his GP defendant, saying had he been referred to hospital after he'd been seen by the GP, there would have been a high likelihood of cure, whereas by the time that treatment did commence, his chances of surviving for 10 years were less than 50%. Without trial on the basis of statistics, the judge found that he had only ever had a 42% chance of surviving for 10 years, even if treated promptly. So actually, the chances loss is less than 50%. The claimant said, well, the court is supposed to restore me to the position that I would have been in, but for the negligence. That's the basic principle of tort, and that you are put back in the position that you would otherwise have been in. He has lost a reduced prospect of survival. That's a loss. It has a value. Really, what the claimant was trying to do was persuade the court that past hypothetical events should be determined not on a balance of probabilities basis, but by balancing risks and chances, admittedly with then an appropriate discount and damages to reflect the chance the defendant isn't the only cause of that loss. And the court roundly rejected this argument. And I think really it was on a policy basis, because finding that a reduction in the prospect of a favourable outcome was a head of loss that you could recover for in and of itself in clinical negligence was held to be a step too far, and that you could only recover for that loss of a favourable outcome if you could prove that the actual remission in question had, on a balance of probabilities, had better than 50% caused a particular injury or loss. And I think really the court understood that if you could say that it was loss of a chance is what you're recovering for, that you could probably reframe many, if not most, clinical negligence claims in that way. And in Greg, Lord Hoffman thought that the wholesale adoption of effectively possible rather than probable causation as the criteria for liability would be so radical a change in the law, it would amount to legislation. It would have huge consequences, obviously, for the NHS, but also for insurance companies in the personal injury sort of sector. And I think a sort of useful cross-reference is the much easier threshold to satisfy in coronial jurisdiction, where all you have to find is that on a balance of probability, an actual omission has made more than a minimal contribution to death. I think there is reasons, obviously, in the coronial jurisdiction as to why that lower threshold is applied, but it would be a radical change to read that across into clinical negligence. So I think, you know, that's sort of really where we get to after Greg.
And so what are the key judgments that practitioners need to know?
There are sort of four key judgments you have to be aware of if you think you're in this loss of a chance area. The first is Hodson against Eats Berkshire, where there was no damages awarded for the loss of 25% chance of recovery. Secondly, there's Wilshire against Essex, where the court held that the claimant had failed to prove the defendant had increased the risk of a known factor leading to injury, rather than adding to a list of possible causal factors. You then have Greg, which has been affirmed in Wright against Cambridge Medical Group and made it absolutely clear it applies to clinical negligence where there is a third party who would have been involved in the decision making at some point. And lastly, there is then the exception. There is the Fairchild and Glenhaven, where, and this is largely, not exclusively, but largely in the asbestos arena, where there is an exception deemed to be required because there's scientific uncertainty about the causal mechanism. And in those circumstances, there's an exception to the normal rule of legal causation and the material increase of risk is held to be sufficient. But really, where you're at as a claimant following Greg is that you cannot recover solely for the damages just for the value of a loss of a chance for better clinical outcome. Even if had you had that better outcome, you'd have avoided physical injury or harm. It doesn't matter if the chance is real or substantial if it is less than 50%. But what you can potentially recover for is the lost chance of obtaining a future benefit or avoiding a detriment that would otherwise have materialised. So you would have benefited from the benefit or avoided that detriment. but for the negligently caused physical injury, even if that chance is less than 50%.
It sounds complicated. Sarah, perhaps you could explain this to us using some of the cases that have come up in your own practice.
Yes, of course. The reality is, as we say, a lot of the time this is a cancer case, honestly. A lot of the time it's a delayed diagnosis of cancer case, and that tends to be where my practice lies with this kind of causation argument. There is certainly a school of thought propagated by one or more experts that delay in the diagnosis and treatment of cancer in certain circumstances actually makes no material difference. It being said that either this was a survivable cancer or it was not, and that chemotherapy actually makes minimal difference depending upon the date of metastatic spread. Many of us have encountered the doctrine of the micro metastases, an invisible but nonetheless present and circulating spread, which, whilst it hasn't pooled as a secondary anywhere, affects survival outcome. And therefore, you can frequently encounter, if you are a claimant or run, if you are a defendant, the argument that loss of life has not, in fact, been caused by the breach, and therefore you haven't gone from above the 51% to below. Obviously, if you've got experts who disagree in relation to this, you are looking at litigation. My important tip would be always, as a claimant, plead not only that life has been lost, but that there is a diminution of life. Because, leaving aside whether or not you can prove survival would have been achieved, you can almost always prove that there would have been an extension of life. In other words, it's not a case of this was survivable or not survivable. The question is, would the claimant have died on the exact same date? And I have to say, my tip here is really for both sides, it's extremely difficult for anybody to say that a delay in diagnosis and treatment has had no material effect on outcome at all. Firstly, that flies in the face of common sense. It also really flies in the face of national screening and advertising to the effect that earlier diagnosis and treatment is preventative. And therefore, if you plead as a fallback that the delay in diagnosis and treatment has led to a diminution in life, you can end up in a scenario whereby even if the claim is lost in terms of establishing that a claimant would have survived their cancer, nonetheless, you have a fallback claim for a number of months or potentially longer extension of life that has not been achieved. I've had that scenario several times, including one case, a case of Goodhead, which actually went to trial, full trial on all elements. The claimant did not establish life would have been saved, but did establish that a loss of life of a few months had been caused by the negligence, and therefore the claimant succeeded, recovers some damages, by which time it was obviously an estate claim, and their costs. And therefore, what I would always say is make sure you plead both of these. Diminution in life is a loss on the balance of probabilities, even if loss of life is not. And the second area, of course, is the treatment more onerous? That is a separate injury for which you can claim, even if the date of death cannot be altered or not significantly altered. Nonetheless, if, for example, there was additional treatment by way of surgery, double mastectomy, for example, or radiotherapy or chemoradiotherapy, which would have been avoided at an earlier stage of diagnosis and treatment, that in itself is also an actionable injury. So all is not lost as a claimant if you cannot prove survival difference in outcome. And as a defendant, I would say be very cautious of these and think about making limited offers in relation to a few months loss of life. Otherwise, you can end up with a full trial in which the defendant succeeds in establishing that the claimant would nonetheless still not have survived with timely treatment, but goes down for 3 months general damages and some attendant loss and therefore cost. So it's important for both sides, claimant or defendant.
That's really helpful, Sarah. Thanks. And so if we were now to move to the second area involving loss of chance, so financial loss. So this is where loss of chance has a part to play in PI and clinical negligence in respect of damages, either where a claimant seeks to establish a financial loss and recover damages for a financial gain that they had a chance of achieving, for example, a professional success in a particular field, or where there's a chance that in future they will incur a financial outlay, for example, the costs of future surgery. Dom, can you tell us a little bit about these kinds of cases?
Yes, Emma. So, I mean, you have to sort of park on one side everything you were just been talking about causation, where the lodestone is really the balance of probabilities. And you have to come into this kind of parallel universe where actually you can recover for less than 50% chances. And you know, when you're looking at quantum on a loss of chance basis, the test is different in application. You don't have to prove as a claimant that you would have achieved something or gained something on the bounds of probabilities, more that there was a real or substantial chance, more than just purely speculative. And that's Court of Appeal and McGill against Sports and Ents Media. I mean, the most famous case of this nature that all our talk lecturers loved at university was Chaplin and Hicks with the loss of a chance of winning a beauty contest. And the first step really is straightforward is, well, what would the claimant have in fact done absent the negligence or absent the injury? Would they have in fact entered the beauty contest in the first place, or would they have applied for a particular job? If they can establish that they would have been successful in obtaining that job or winning that beauty contest, then they can recover from any loss that flows from being denied that opportunity. But what often is more likely is that the claimant can't establish that they would have been successful at the interview on the bounds of probabilities because it's dependent on a third person awarding them that job or saying that they've got the best knobbly knees. It's something that's outside the claimant's control, so they cannot give evidence on the bounds of probabilities it would have happened. But if the claimant has some evidence on which the court can assess the percentage chance or probability of the claimant deriving the benefit or avoiding that detriment, then the court will look to make an award in damages and special damages. But then if they have assessed that percentage chance or discount, that's then applied to the value of the loss and you get the discounted value as special damages. So if the first prize in the beauty competition was £100 and you had a 35% chance of winning it, you would then be awarded £35 as being 35% of the first prize of £100. Three top tips really from the case law. Firstly, that loss of a chance is a question of fact for the trial judge, that's Davis against Taylor. And it is something that higher courts are very, very leery about interfering in, that finding. Turnbull against War, you have to plead loss of a chance. And as a defendant, if someone hasn't explicitly pleaded it, then you need to make that point by way of response. And lastly, that there has to be some evidence. Yeah, and therefore, as a claimant, what you're looking for is trying to find any possible evidence. So say it's loss of a job opportunity. You'd be wanting to get evidence from your previous appraisals. You'd be wanting to get any evidence from the people who did the interview to say, well, had we interviewed Miss X, then we would have thought that she was amazing because of these reasons. It's trying to be creative and imaginative and find any evidence you can to kind of bolster your case that there is a real and substantial chance that you've lost. But I think, Sarah, this is something which you've come across rather more recently.
I have. I've come across it recently in one of my own cases. What I'm going to do, first of all, is mention actually a case which involves other members of Chambers, and that's XYZ against Portsmouth Hospitals NHS Trust, which is a 2011 decision of Mr. Justice Spencer. I highly recommend this. Not just because members of James were in it, but it contains a very good summary of the legal principles in relation to this type of loss of a chance. In other words, loss of a chance where you can recover for something that had a less than 50% chance of success, particularly paragraphs 54 onwards. The court gives essentially a full skeleton argument in relation to this type of recovery. This particular case was loss of a chance in setting up and launching what was a multi-million pound business, as alleged by the claimant. And the court goes through all of the case law and the assessment of chances and makes clear that you can assess multiple chances along the way with a view to finding out what the appropriate valuation and quantum is. And in this particular case, the claimant recovered 5.8 million. So in reality, it can be done as long as your evidence is extremely good. So that's what I would say. Look at that one, first of all, rather than one of mine.
I like to think it's those nuggets of wisdom that our listeners come to us for. And I imagine many people will be hoping to read from paragraph 54 in XYZ and Portsmouth Hospitals. I should say, as we always do, we will include the links to all of these cases on the UK Human Rights blog post accompanying this episode. But Dom, do you have any other helpful illustrations?
Two examples that people are very familiar with seeing in sort of schedule laws and counter schedules, where you are looking at chance as well, are medical treatment, where you say, well, there's a 5% chance I'm going to require this procedure in later life. And although conceptually it's actually very difficult to see the justification for arguing for an award on that basis, because it's treatment which on the balance of probabilities is never going to be required. Nevertheless, it is frequently claimed, and defendants will frequently make a settlement in valuation of 5% of the £10,000 operation and so on. The other example which might help is when you're looking at care and assistance, future care and assistance, there's very often a discount made for saying, well, once you get to the age of 75%, you would have required care and assistance in any event. So that's another sort of example of this discounting an assessment of chance that happens by the court. But in the specific sort of key area where this really bites, and that is on the sort of loss of future earnings, is, there are three examples just briefly to look at. The first is Collett against Smith, where the claimant had been a member of a Premiership football team's youth academy. When he was 18, playing his first game for the adult team, but only the reserve team, really bad leg injury, and was never able to play professionally again. And he was given a very substantial award for loss of earnings for career as a Premiership footballer, with actually only a modest 15% discount for that loss of earnings. But the court declined to make an award for the loss of a chance of longer future term earnings from managing or coaching, because that was getting into the too speculative and too little evidence about what would happen. The second is Langford against Hebrum, about a professional kickboxer. Again, there was forensic accountant advice about, well, there were four possible scenarios depending on how well he did in his career as a kickboxer. And the judge assessed the chance of each of those scenarios individually and said, well, chance of that scenario is 40%, the second 80%, and so on. And on appeal, it was held that you could make an award for each category of the lost chance and look at each scenario individually. But nevertheless, there should be an overall discount of 20% to reflect the many variables in each scenario. And then Langford has applied, and slightly more helpfully illustrated, I think, in Clark against Maltby, where a solicitor was in a road traffic accident, had a serious brain injury, and it was a question of, well, what would her future career have played out at? And there were three scenarios. There were partner in a regional law firm, partner in a medium-sized city law firm, or partner in a large or medium-sized city law firm, where obviously the loss of earnings was significantly different for each one. And it was assessed to be 100% chance that she would have become a regional law firm. So she got 100% of that baseline scenario. There was an 85% chance that she would have joined a medium-sized law firm as a partner. So she got the differential between the salary in that scenario and the initial scenario, but then discounted by 15% because there was only an 85% chance of achieving that scenario. And then lastly, she would have got 180,000 had she become a partner in a city law firm. So she got the difference between that and her base salary of 110,000. But discounted by 70% because she only had a 30% chance of adopting that scenario. So it what you're really having to do is to break up each scenario and try to drill down as to the likely chance for each one. As a claimant, you're probably wanting to be doing it on a more broad brush basis. As a defendant, it's probably to your advantage to be trying to break it down into stages to say, well, with each increased stage, there's more uncertainty, more chance that wouldn't have happened, and therefore increased discount on the chance of that scenario.
Sarah, have you encountered this sort of issue in any of your PI claims?
I have encountered, in fact, exactly this. A few years ago, I was acting for a fantastic, very impressive then young man, Lorne Mayers, who was one of Britain's most successful American football athletes and great hopes. Unfortunately, he was shot in the chest, stomach, pelvis, arms and legs whilst attending a New Year's Eve party in 2007 in a nightclub. The case, in fact, first came to me in relation to liability because we wanted to sue the nightclub for lack of wanding rather than obviously the perpetrator and pursue the criminal injuries scheme. So in fact, it came to me in relation really to the establishment of liability. But when we moved on to assessing quantum, the difficulty we had, of course, is that whilst he played for Berlin Thunder in Germany, he was just breaking into the NFL, having been scouted by the Oakland Raiders. And we were trying to establish potential loss of earnings as an American football player. Initially, the defendant, whilst obviously denying liability, started making low offers, which we rejected. I think my instructing solicitor, it's fair to say, thought I was insane when I told him to reject their first offer because of liability. But what it taught us is evidence is the key to everything. Nowadays, courts tend to be reluctant in relation to employment experts, but in certain circumstances, they are appropriate. And in this case, it was more a case of grunt work by my instructing solicitor, for which hats off to him, simply actually getting people to give us witness statements, flying to America to get this information. And as a result, we were eventually able to establish a very successful and large claim for him based on the career path he should have had as a successful American football professional. So really my tip there is, first of all, don't lose heart, even if it's a speculative chance. You need some sort of evidence that it would have happened. And then the best evidence you have, find it and present it, because it's all coming from one side. It's very hard as a defendant to disprove evidence. It's very easy when you're defending to disprove speculation. So if you've got somebody who's got no history in any area, my suggestion would be don't advance a claim for huge loss of earnings in a field they dreamt of. If, however, you have somebody who was on the path to establishing themselves, it's a case of stepping stones. If you can provide the building blocks for a pathway along which you can lead the court to an appropriate assessment of damages, then that is the appropriate way forward. So that was an unusual one and a great privilege to be part of.
Well, thank you both so much for coming on the pod today, and particularly for such an engaging discussion about a topic that, let's be honest, sometimes can feel a little bit dry. We will, as I mentioned, include all the links to the cases discussed today on the blog post that accompanies this episode. And I, as ever, always do commend the QMLR to listeners, where they will find articles written by Sarah and Dom, and also a number of other members from One Crown Office Row. So thank you both so much for giving up the time today. It was really helpful.
LawPod UK is presented by Emma Louise Fenelon and produced by One Crown Office Row.